And if I were to welcome everybody today to the XRP Army News podcast. Now, today's session, we are having a very special guest. And as all of you remember, we have been having influencers from all over the world on our podcast to bring you a little insight into themselves, as well as some of their personal opinions about some of the things that are going on in the XRP world. Now, those influencers now all have their own personal opinions. And let me remind you, they are not financial advisors, as we all laugh and chuckle about. But today's session, we're having on an extremely special guest that is someone who is probably as revered as anyone in the influencer space because of how she handles her particular channel and her responses within the XRP community. So today we are having on our very own guest, Crypto Eddie. And before I go and say too much, probably the wrong things, I'm going to bring Crypto Eddie on and introduce you to all of you. Okay, Crypto Eddie, welcome to the XRP Army News podcast. Thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Christopher. It's really a pleasure to meet you and to join you on your channel.
You have you're kind of in an early morning session over there in Japan, aren't you, right now?
Well, it's 10:15 in the morning, and it's early for me because I'm not an early riser. I usually work in the night.
Do you find you get a lot more done at night, do you?
Yeah, I usually do my research up to about midnight, and then I'll do the recording sometime between 2, 3, and 4 o'clock in the morning.
Whoa, boy, that would just kill me, and entirely kill me. Yeah, you know, I know that I've had a lot of people ask me, why is Crypto Eddie in Japan of all places? You know, this is you're one of the strange ones in the group. So what's happening over in Japan that brought you there, and why are you staying there?
Yeah, so it's not common for women, actually, especially my age. There are a few women who come over to teach English that just get out of college, and they do it for a couple of years of experience. But I actually came over in my 40s, and I was living in LA at the time, and I met somebody who was also living in LA, and he happened to be Japanese. And so it's one of those love stories. And I moved over here as an experiment, and I never left.
Wow. And the two of you are still together? Should I ask that question?
You don't even need to go into that part of the detail of the story. But I usually, you know, have been really... I think in the channel, because I do the fluff, you can see that I fell in love with this country in many, many ways. And it is really a great place to live, especially if you love cities. Tokyo is one of the best.
Yes. In fact, one of the things I love about your channel is your fluff at the end. I think you could almost be a tour guide in Japan based on how detailed you are about that. When you started doing your channel, what brought you to mix the two together, XRP and then the just almost a historic view of Japan that you do every time?
Well, you know, my channel was originally a channel about sumo wrestling. I'm a sumo wrestling.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I'm a sumo wrestling. And channel was launched as covering sumo, but that turned out to be highly unpopular. So, and I love history, and I also have a small import-export business where I am specializing in goods that are from the Meiji and Taisho era, sometimes Edo, sometimes Showa, but I have that little business that has taught me so much about Japan in terms of history. So I just, you know, I'm a real history buff, and I take this historical point of view a lot of times with the fluff, because even modern Japan ties into something that dates back to historical records. And it's always, I think, fascinating.
Of course. Now, do you get your products from the outside, the exterior, like the villages and things, or you get it from manufacturers?
I have sources that are mostly licensed antique dealers.
Okay.
You have to be licensed in this country to actually sell antiques.
Okay.
You can't just call yourself an antique dealer.
Okay. I didn't realize antiques is what you did, but then you ship those antiques all over the world as part of your business?
I do. I think there's probably less than 10 countries that I have never shipped to.
Good grief. Now, do you have a website that you use for that?
I do, but I do draw a line between my private life and my Crypto Eddie life.
All right, very good. All right, I understand entirely.
Yeah, it's just, I don't share that because I think, you know, the crypto world is fun. I love it. And everybody usually uses some sort of avatar name or something because there is a sense of privacy that I think a lot of us still want to maintain.
Right. And I heard a lot of that from Sincerely George when we were talking, and she was extremely protective of not only her name or location and many other things. And she has some very, very logical reasons for that, which made a great deal of sense to me, especially when we're in this space and this time in history. And of course, she is very much an IT person and programmer. So she's seen so much as far as the hacking side that goes on that she just doesn't want anybody to know. So,
yeah, your digital footprint is
when you put up I don't mean to belabor this because I don't want to spend a lot more time on it, but some of the things I've seen in your fluff of Japan, some of the most beautiful gardens I've ever seen in my life. Is that pretty common over there?
It is, especially if you go to Kansai area and you visit places like Kyoto or over on the other side, like, there's just so many traditional towns and cities. Tokyo is a big modern city. So yes, there are some gardens, but they're not nearly as prevalent as you might see in some other parts of the country. But yeah, I could name probably 20 or 30 in Tokyo that are just really outstanding.
That's amazing.
There's hundreds of them in Kyoto.
Hundreds of them in one area, one city?
Mm.
Wow. That's and probably most of them are several hundred years old by now, at least, huh?
Well, older than that. The one I can tell you that is, even the two or three, well, even more than that, they have like 400, 500, 600 year histories here in Tokyo. So you go into the old ancient capitals of Kamakura and Nara and Kyoto, and you're going to find gardens that have been there for 1200 years or even sometimes longer.
That's us in the U.S., of course, that's unbelievable since we have, a little over 200 year history, and that's it. To pivot 180, what brought you into the XRP or cryptocurrency world? What enticed you there?
I was originally just focusing on the whole entire space in the beginning when I first did my channel, because I, like many people in this space, I was following many YouTubers at that time. As I was an early adopter into buying Bitcoin, I made the first purchase in January 2014. Ooh. And so I was watching BTC in particular for a lot of years, and then just kind of got hooked on many of the content providers that were in the space at the time, and almost all of them are gone now. I mean, we have Tonevase still, CryptoLark, gosh, Andreas Antonopoulos is still doing videos occasionally. Ivan at Tech was kind of came in midway, but I think most of those early YouTubers are just, you know, no longer maintaining their channels. But I was really, really excited. And of course, then I, you know, cut my teeth on all of their content and then got into the researching end. And then I started doing from a Japan perspective because I could see a lot that was happening here that wasn't getting covered in the West. So that was really the beginning, was covering the whole entire ecosystem before we saw the crash of the altcoins. And I was covering everything and anything that had to do with the space with a particular spin from Japan.
But you have very much have brought in Japan into the forefront of the crypto world in your own way. There is one bank, a local bank that has really dug deep into the cryptocurrency and adopting even XRP. What is the Japanese bank that's really heading the way over there?
Well, there's the Shumisen Bank, which is owned by SBI Holdings. Maybe that, and their partner is Sumitomo. Right. So that could be who you're talking about. But also the largest bank in Japan, MUFJ, is also really crypto friendly and XRP friendly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the good thing about Japan is that because they have really taken a clear stance on regulatory clarity, it's not a taboo space for banks to enter. So there's a lot of banks actually that are working not only with XRP, but also working with their own digital assets.
Well, that brings me to another point. Are you considered really Southeast Asia? Would you consider yourself in that zone?
No. Southeast Asia is definitely south of here. Like, you start to cut that line off at around, maybe I would say, Guam or the Philippines, and then south of that. Yeah.
I keep hearing so much that a lot of the potential growth of XRP is going to come from Southeast Asia. What is that all about? Where's that coming from?
Well, mostly because those economies, which are developing still, mm-hmm. have a tremendous amount of population that are living in other countries as migrant workers. So they are sending a lot of money home. I've got my kitty cat behind my laptop there. A lot of those migrant workers are working in places all over the world, and then they're sending their money back home to their families. So the remittance corridors to those developing countries are major. That's why.
So developing countries, and even when you go into Africa, for example, some of those areas probably are going to be an excellent place for some of the growth of XRP and the ODL. At least it appears so. I'm here to kind of give you my cell phone so that people can get the unbanked can get access to moving currency.
Yeah, in Africa, it's going to be absolutely another big, huge remittance corridor, but it's a case-by-case basis on the country, because some of those countries don't have large populations and or don't have populations that are living necessarily outside of their countries. I mean, but if you get countries like Nigeria and Ghana and well, those two in particular, and of course, Northern Africa with Egypt, there are some really strong remittance corridors with those countries. Mm-hmm. But still, nothing is comparing to like India, for example, or the Philippines, that corridor. Those two corridors are just really, really massive, probably in the top five.
And what about China? China seems to be developing their own in some way. But I'm not sure.
Well, they are. I don't see, I could be wrong, but I don't see China adopting XRP.
Right.
But I could be wrong because I really don't have the clear view as to what kind of conversations are going on. Now, they might use the ledger. They might use the ledger or the Ripple technology, but I don't think they're going to adopt the use of XRP.
Well, they tend to have their own way of doing things regardless. And the last I heard, they were working on their own, if you will, not currency, but their own XRP type remittance. So who knows what's going to happen, but I can see them being on the ledger nonetheless, because we do know that the ledger is going to be able to be used for a tremendous amount of other competing currencies. Why is XRP maybe going to lead in that? Because we know that a lot of different currencies can be used on the ledger. So why XRP?
I think from what I understand, based on reading people who've done the developing, it is built for that scalability and for the speed, and it is just, it's built. It was designed to be the best asset for that ledger. But you're right. I mean, there could be multiple digital currencies that are used in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I hear, of course, as I keep saying I hear, that's because we never know for sure, do we? But I understand that liquidity is such a big part of what's going on in the growth, potential growth, failure even, should I dare say, of XRP. What exactly is liquidity? And when is it going to be at a level that XRP can be really in the global economy?
Well, again, I go back to, I used what David answered on Quora. I don't know if you spend any time on Quora, but David is still very active on Quora. He does probably an answer of random questions every couple of days, every week, and has continued to. He has really given some great insight as to how that liquidity in correlation to price is going to be, that those large amounts of XRP, whether it's being held by an exchange or by a market maker or by sometimes the financial institution, there has to be large quantities of it that can be utilized, drawn off of, to basically service all those corridors that, according to Naveen Gupta, there are 30 to 50 major ones that Ripple is focusing on. And that should we get those large, significant piles of XRP around the globe so that the liquidity is easily accessible. Liquidity means you have to be able to buy and sell easily, get on, get off easily. And if you can't sell it easily or you can't buy it easily, it has poor liquidity. So once those 30 to 50 piles of XRP availability or ODL is out there around the globe, it does have its very significant impact on the demand. So that's why liquidity is so important, to not only get the on-demand liquidity within all those big corridors, but also to start to see its impact on price.
Well, with the liquidity being one thing, the price does have to seemingly would have to increase in order to provide. There's only so much XRP. Doesn't that mean that the price has to at some point go up in order to handle the liquidity that's needed?
According to Catherine Coley, who was once taking care of all the liquidity for Ripple before she took the CEO position of finance, they're definitely, like, if you're just going to move the FX on a daily basis, that is, in the neighborhood of $5 or $6 trillion. Absolutely, the price has to be higher. So, yes.
Well, I Cryptopolis did give his his guess on what it's going to be and when. I want to ask you to do that tonight, but he was brave enough to do it, and so he's on record for guessing what the price is going to be in what year. But we'll not do that tonight here because there's too much. It's too much to the moon is speculation as there is.
What price did he give?
The additional corridors are going to happen open up fairly rapidly, or do you think we're kind of at a leveling point right now?
No, this is a train that is going downhill now. I mean, we've been going uphill for years, and it's only been in production for 1 year, right? And again, I'm using a quote here that just came out in the last week from Dilip Rao, who decided to retire, and he was the Ripple employee who actually did the first major bank deal for Ripple. He's going to retire in Australia. This is his last week, I believe. He said that we are going to crush the 2019 targets. That's his word, crush. And he also says that the sales team currently is killing it. So I have no doubts that the number of banks and financial institutions using XRP over the next 12 months is going to blow everyone away.
Well, we saw just recently that in 2016, there were 12 banks that experimented with XRP for over a 6 month period. I'm sure you've seen that, this particular deal. But they said that it was too risky. And then, of course, Ripple has come in and solved that problem. So those 12 banks are coming back online, or already back online, most of them, as I understand it.
They needed to, so that it would settle in 4 seconds. That was one of the improvements they made. And also now they made it so that the banks don't have to actually hold it. That's what I'm talking about, these piles of XRP out there, whether it's being held by an exchange or by a market maker, or, you know, there'll be some big bank players. I have my own, I think there's going to be banks in Singapore and Thailand that are holding XRP. That's just my guess from my research and from
watching. You don't think they have to hold an XRP?
Sorry?
So you don't think they have to hold XRP in order to make it work?
No, I think they will. But no, absolutely. David, as he said, they have created a workaround so that banks can utilize XRP, but they don't necessarily have to hold XRP.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now
that's why you see Bitso right now having so much liquidity volume with the Mexican corridor.
Okay.
And then you've got the Philippines exchange that has recently shown some volume increase, and they are an exchange. So in these two corridors that are moving money between the Philippines and for Mexico, they're exchanges that are holding the XRP. But we don't know, you know, maybe MoneyGram is going to hold XRP. This is also a possibility. And you've got the countries that have some regulatory clarity. Saudi Arabia is actually working on it. The government is actually working on the regulatory clarity. So they might be the banks in the future that might hold XRP. I don't know for sure, but they're working towards that same regulatory clarity that Thailand did. So Thailand, the Siam Commercial Bank has made the statement that they are going to be an XRP hub. They use the word hub.
Wow.
So hub means that they want to service Southeast Asia in terms of liquidity.
It seems logical they'd have to hold in order to do that then.
Well, somebody's got to hold it. See, do we really care who's holding it? I don't really care who's holding it. I don't care. As long as those big piles of XRP are being held out there that has the significant impact on demand. And with that significant impact on demand, and as the volume increases, the price has to go up.
Would you care to comment on what you who you think the most stable exchanges are?
Oh, well, there's so many of them, you know. Okay. I think Ripple, I think Ripple does a very good job at choosing their liquidity partners.
Okay.
Yeah, you know there was just a liquidity deal done with Alchemy, and Alchemy is a liquidity superhighway, and they just did a partnership with a company that has actually launched over 100 FX brokers and 60 exchanges. Ooh. And that partnership just happened on Monday, I think it was, on the, well, maybe it was Friday the 5th or Thursday the 5th. It just happened. And that Alchemy company is a spring investment.
Okay. All right.
So you're seeing these liquidity deals and movement in the space. You just have to, you know, kind of pay attention.
Everything seems to be linking up. That is obvious. You can draw a lot of strings from point to point, like you would on a board, and you can string a lot of these people together. It's amazing. And speaking of that, this is something I just saw. I mean, just today, the CEO Chris Larson distributing $7 billion in XRP to the unbanked and financially undeserved. $7 billion XRP. What is that all about? Have you heard that?
No, I haven't caught that yet. Did he say that it's going? Is it going to a particular country, or did he specify who's going to distribute it or how it's going to be distributed?
This didn't specify. It was kind of a headline that I caught, and I thought $7 billion XRP for the unbanked and the underdeserved and so forth. And I'm going, is this to what, shore up the third world country aspect of the growth of XRP?
Possibly. Now, I don't know. I mean, and that's a big number, but you have to remember Forte, the gaming company that's building an ecosystem that's very much like the banking system. They're going to be able to run all of those non-fungible tokens and create market makers and a floor on the pricing and pretty much duplicate a banking ecosystem for the gaming system. They were given a fund of $100 billion.
Ooh, okay.
$100 million. I'm sorry. No, gosh, darn it. I really want to check that because my brain just went. I want to just make sure I get that price right. So right. This, you're saying that it's $7 billion that he is giving to the.
Right. $7 billion to underbanked and financially underdeserved. Is it that? I don't know if that's really a word or not, but that's what was written, underdeserved.
Well, you know, did you see that Stephan Thomas is in Africa right now?
No. Okay. Yeah. There we go.
There is a Ripple team through the Spring arm again. And of course, Spring is the company that keeps pumping XRP into the ecosystems to drive the adoption and the use of XRP. So, I mean, I don't know, but my guess is, well, we've got Ripple people in Africa. They're going to be doing a conference there. And so anytime I see that kind of action, something's about to be announced. I'm positive. So maybe it's going to go to some project that's happening in Africa, because there is a lot of underbanked and unbanked in Africa.
Yeah, the unbanked for sure. I have, still have some friends in Ghana, and that is a huge problem there, especially out in the, it's the reason I ask you about villages. I don't know if they're certainly not comparable to Africa, but out in where they just they're still trading like that we have thousands of years ago. It's product for product. It's not cash for product or anything like that. So yeah. they just are no bank, not even underbanked. They don't even know what banks are. So
yeah, You might be surprised. You're in the U.S., right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I was just working on a research last night, and according to the Federal Reserve, 5% of adults in the United States, 13 million, are unbanked in the U.S.
Whoa.
18% of the U.S. is underbanked. And what that means is they use other financial services like check cashing services, paycheck advance services, the payday loan services. So they're getting their paycheck from their company and they're going to these other services. They don't have bank accounts. That's the underbanked. And then you've got 5% who have no bank account. That's a whopping 25% of the U.S. are either unbanked or underbanked. So you,
over 50 million people or more there.
That's the federal. Then those numbers come from 2017 out of the Federal Reserve. So, yeah, I think that servicing that underbanked and unbanked is a huge also opportunity to again drive more adoption and use of XRP, for sure.
It seems like we need to start working at home in America if our banks are anything that they should be. I know that Lee with SPQR had a big program on Bank of America on his show the other day, and they're apparently getting ready to explode with XRP, even with their logos in their document that they're putting out to the other bankers. I'm going, okay, well, let's see what happens there.
This train is running down the hill right now.
Just get out of the way. Now, if anybody wants to buy, 22 cents is a great place to buy. And if it hits 20 cents, buy more. That's all I got to say. Also, I know that Ripple is doing a great job as far as its educational outreach. Educational centers, I guess they're called or whatever. They're just trying to just turn loose the technology and let it go.
Yeah, that's a real, I think, strategic, really, really strategic to ensure the future of this ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And Tokyo University and Kyoto University are two of the two top universities here in Japan, and they are now operating nodes, and they are working with Spring to provide an incubator kind of environment for people to work on ILP and find other use cases. I love that part about Ripple, actually. I really, really, really think that is something to be highly respected. And I think that's often overlooked as to how Ripple is grooming the new and up and coming developers for the future. Yeah, it's very, very, I think, strategic and forward thinking that a lot of these current projects don't have at all.
Well, I understand. Again, this actually came from Sincerely George. She was saying the ledger has so many other possibilities besides just moving money around the world. The ledger can be used for so many other things. Well, it's got blockchain, whatever you want to call it. But
cross-border is just one.
Yeah, it's just one of it's kind of limitless if you think about the possibilities of what it offers the world in general.
Yeah, that's why this space is so interesting, which is, I guess, maybe back to the original question when you asked me, how did I get into XRP? Well, once the altcoin crash occurred and XRP was one of the only few that really came out of the flames alive, and Bitcoin got hijacked by Wall Street. The only thing happening in the Bitcoin space, and don't get me wrong, I'm a Bitcoin holder, and I'm so happy I found Bitcoin when I did. But the only thing you can cover on Bitcoin right now is price. That's it. Period. End of statement. You know, just watching price action. But when you've got Ripple, the company, driving all of these different economies for the use of XRP. There's not only just so much happening, but it's so interesting and it is so fun to cover. It is so fun to cover. Yeah.
Right. Well, I know you enjoy it. By the way, will PayPay be using XRP, do you think?
PayPay just did a deal with, you know, the deal that SBI, Mr. Kitao,
right,
just 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm, did a charge up integration with MoneyTap. So PayPay and MoneyTap are now integrated.
Whoa.
So, yeah, yeah. So, you know, Mr. Kitao doesn't miss an opportunity, let me tell you that.
Well, PayPay is such a wonderful story. My gosh, yeah. It's, for companies, what, 0 to 5 million, 500 million? What was it? Something huge like that.
Yeah, they did it in just about a month's time. Yeah. Yeah, you know, if you, that was also too, you know, the scrutinize or securitize, scrutinize. Securitize is also a site that the Ripple Spring arm invested into. And Mr. Kitao just did an investment that has 6 zeros at the end. We don't know the amount because it was an undisclosed amount. And this is going to provide the platform for the security tokens, which is going to be the next big, big thing in this space. And that's where they're going to, of course, be able to tokenize a lot of these illiquid assets and create a financial instrument that is going to be another big shot in the arm for this space in terms of growing the market caps.
But do you think VeChain is a competitor, or is it?
No, not a competitor. Yeah. Yeah, I did, you know, I interviewed the CEO of VeChain about 2 weeks ago.
I'm sorry, I didn't see that one.
No. Yeah, and I did it with combination with the CEO of BitTrue, because BitTrue just added some promotional programs for VeChain. And VeChain is really the amount of partners. They also kind of keep their announcements a little understated, unlike some of those projects out there like Tron. VeChain has been very humble in the way they have announced, but now we really see how much traction they have. But they're really providing, although they might enter the financial sector in the future, but right now they're providing that blockchain support and trackability with products in the world to fight counterfeiting and to ensure origin, so that you can really see if something is truly organic, for example. So No, I think it's a totally, totally different segment.
Okay. All right. That probably simply didn't understand what VeChain was about. I heard something that they were focused a great deal on smart contracts and things like that, but still didn't quite understand how they fit into the marketplace itself.
Think of them as a validator on blockchain for the supply chains.
Okay. All right. Which then makes them very compatible, if not great to have in the family, so to speak. What?
A big VeChain fan.
Yeah. There's another one that I recently heard of that maybe you can give me some insight into. It's one called Bolt. What do you know anything about Bolt?
Nothing.
Okay, it's a Singapore-based company of some sort, and I think Dustin was going over to Singapore. In fact, he's in Singapore now visiting with that company. I didn't know if there's any information on that you might give us as well. What do you think Ripple should do now? If you were on the board at Ripple, what suggestions would you make personally to help them grow?
I don't think they need my help. I think the team that they have assembled, honestly, is some of the most talented, competitive, intelligent, aggressive team that seems to gel very well. I think the employees like what they do. I think they enjoy their work. I think they feel hilarious with the growth that they've had in the last 12 months. I'm sure all of them are trying to work hard to do their part to bring the price up, because it's in everybody's interest who is attached to this space as a holder of the asset. I guess maybe the one part that I focus on, of course, is I focus on three things as of late: utility, corridors, and regulation. I still think there probably needs to be an additional push or help or working with regulators to get this regulation, not just in the United States, but to get a standardization of regulation around the world done so that everybody feels free to use the digital asset to maximize their bottom line and stay competitive.
Well, the global regulation, does that mean that we're headed toward global a currency?
I don't think so. But it's just too many walled gardens out there, right? There's too many self interest country by country. I don't think so. Now, it could be an SDR that is part of a basket of new currencies that include digital assets also. That's a possibility. And maybe that's as close as we'll get. But do I actually see the whole global society using one currency? No. I don't see it. Not in my lifetime.
Not in my lifetime either. That's for sure. The thing about having a global currency, I think it's something that it's just out of our reach right now, no doubt about it. Too many big boys in the pie. And which brings me to that other topic too. Right now we talk about a level playing field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that means all of us can be involved in this right now. But what happens when the really big guys get involved? What happens to that level playing field, just like the internet?
Yeah. Well, definitely was the buzzword of 2019, wasn't it? I mean, even the BIS general manager used it again in his recent speech. And we see everybody kind of jumping on that bandwagon to use it. Having a level playing field is always, I think, good, because right now we live in a world of a lot of disparity, right? There's a lot of disparity in all sectors. In all sectors, financial, everything. Mm-hmm. So I think trying to achieve a level playing field is, in terms of ideology, is probably not a bad thing. But eventually, when you do have that level playing field, it usually is dominated by still the powers to be, right? Like you mentioned, like we saw that happened in the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess maybe I'm not sure what your question is, but I think, everybody's trying to make it more of a level playing field within the financial service industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, any monopoly is bad, right? Any monopoly.
Yeah.
And I think banking has been monopolized for a long time. Would you agree?
Well, certainly. Yeah. That's the reason big tech companies are saying, let's do banking without the banks. You know, that's what they're saying now.
Yeah. Well, I think the banks are going to continue to find a way to survive and play along with all of the other payment and transfer service companies. But I think it's going to ultimately be at the benefit of the users. Yeah, because it becomes less of a monopoly. And I think that level playing field benefits all the users at the end of the day.
To talk about the big boys, I know that Ripple's in discussions with Google right now. So that's an interesting little twist that's going on there.
Yeah, well, if you were trying to provide a global solution, you've got to work with, you know, the big four, Google, Amazon, Facebook, and GAFA. Who's the other one? Apple. Yeah, you have to. You have to. If you're not in talks with those four, you're not really playing in the global field.
No. I haven't heard anything about them talking with Amazon, but I don't think that's too far off. But they probably already have. They just haven't announced it yet. That's all.
I don't know. Maybe Google is going to. Who knows? You know, they're one of the big four that are going to have their say for a while longer. They're pretty powerful.
Yeah. And that will affect the overall marketplace without any doubt at all. But I hope to the advantage of those folks that are underbanked and so forth. You know, maybe Google will step in, Amazon will step in, and even help out in that regard around the world. Because they're certainly global in scope. We can hope they have good intentions in their efforts to go into that marketplace.
The one thing I worry about, not worry, worry's not the right word. The one thing that I am, what's the right word? Am I concerned about it? Okay, maybe concerned is a better word. I have some concerns if we go totally to a cashless society. Yeah, I have some real concerns over that. And I know that's probably not a popular thing to say with some people who are working towards achieving that cashless society. But I think that the giving up our cash is really giving up a lot of our privacy. So I definitely have some issue with that.
Well, that would definitely be a huge change. Crypto Eddie, I've taken up a lot of your time this morning. I appreciate it so very much. Before we leave here, and knowing that you're going to be up on our podcast for a time, is there anything you would like to leave with the audience to tell them your hopes, dreams of the future, or any thoughts on the crypto space that you'd like to share with any of those folks?
Oh, I just think I thoroughly enjoy being in this space, and I am looking forward to bringing continued research with a spin from Japan. And I hope everybody has a chance to come and visit Japan sometime on their list of places they want to visit. And I'm feel very fortunate and very lucky to be able to experience this space. And I think that everyone should definitely enjoy this experience.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Again, thank you so much for sharing your time today, your skills and your knowledge, which are very much appreciated. Thanks again, Crypto Eddie.
Yeah, no problem, Christopher. Thank you.
All right, folks, but believe it or not, you certainly must realize that you saw one of the more talented people in our space, but certainly the most gracious person in our space, to say the least. She has a depth of knowledge, even beyond crypto, that shows that she has that depth of graciousness and courtesy. And we appreciate it so much and appreciate having her on today. And join us next time in our XRP Army News episodes that will bring you another in the series of influencers. The next one we have coming up is quite impressive. So keep an eye open. We'll be back with you soon. Bye-bye.